fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
I was Cambria.
Although some locals do call it Cambria, and I did find out the history of that. But anyway, it was beautiful.
Great.
Yeah, it was great.
Awesome. It was really nice. You had a good vacation.
Yes.
Nice.
Mostly.
I'm waiting for Ian.
Cambria is the home of the finest pulled pork sandwiches known to mankind.
Really?
Oh, really? Where is that?
Which right there at that little, you know, sort of restaurant bar that you like. That's right when you're going into town, right there by the gas station.
We went with that.
I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have to check. We'll have to. I ordered the wrong thing.
What is it?
Pulled pork.
I had it.
Oh, Nellie had the pulled pork. It was good. She's not ripping her clothes off in glee, though, so I don't know.
Well, that has to be the reaction whenever you eat a pulled pork sandwich, right?
Right. If it's going to be that good, it's happening.
So at some point towards whenever, there's probably going to be a little extra buzzing on my end.
Okay.
And it seems like my...
Is that going to be from the screaming?
It's going to be from the plug.
The gnashing of teeth.
The plug of the extension, the cord, and my microphone don't seem to like each other. Whenever I plug into the power in the wall in my garage, I just get this buzzing. And it doesn't, I've had to do it before, and it doesn't usually show up in the podcast. Like, you guys will probably hear it, and I'll probably hear it, but for some reason it doesn't record, so I don't know. But it's going to be like this, so I don't know. Because I'm doing this, when we do them in the evening, I have to do them in my garage, because somebody's got to get to sleep. And she had her first day of day camp today, so, you know, she's tired. So
good.
Cannot be screaming about nerd stuff in the garage, you know. I don't know where Ian is. Maybe I should send him an email.
Sounds good.
An Ian mail?
Text or something.
Ian mail. I left my phone in the freaking house. I could always get up and go get it. But as soon as I do that, he's going to be like, hey, I'm here.
That's true.
And then you guys will be talking about nerd stuff. No, that's somebody else.
By the time you come back, we'll
without
be done.
Me, yeah, you'll all be done.
We'll be like, and that's the podcast. Thanks, everybody.
Exactly.
Here Good else. Night, everybody.
Yeah.
Tip your waitress.
Exactly.
Good night, New York.
Here we go. Reply to all. Ian.
Where are you at?
We are waiting for you. Smiley face. Yeah. Your message has been sent. Up, there he is. Okay, I have to decline and then add you to the group. Jesus Christ, don't you people know how it works? Right. Where is Maximilian? No, he just dropped off.
He was so heartbroken by being rejected.
Aww.
Oh, there you go. Add to group call. There you go.
Oh, I'm getting him. Oh,
here he comes.
There he goes.
There he comes.
There's a glowing dot under his chest.
Ian.
Yeah. Come on, Skype.
You can do it.
Baby needs a new pair of shoes. Come on, Hello. Skype.
Wow. Hello, you guys. Are you there?
We're here.
We are here.
All right. Ian is here.
Yes.
Part-time fanboy is in effect.
Success.
Holy. Technology.
Wow. Let's hope that...
Yeah.
Skype holds it together. fucking
okay.
Skype.
You hear me? You hear me, baby? Hold together.
Hold it together. Come on. Just like I was saying while we were calling you. Baby needs a new pair of shoes, Skype. Come on, Skype. So, all right. So I think, you know, we were on vacation for a week. Corey went on vacation. I went on vacation. And while I was on vacation, a big new movie came out that has caused a lot of excitement on the internets.
Yes, Before Midnight.
Which I actually want to see, but... Man of Steel came out. Superman, I guess as of this broadcast, $126 million broken.
And climbing, yeah.
Yeah, and $200 million worldwide. How do you like them apples, Batman?
It's very impressive.
It's very impressive. So I guess before we get into the movie, why don't we talk a little bit about like our impressions about Superman, like the character and the comics? Like, how have you guys liked the comics? Have you guys liked any of the movies? Were you into Smallville? What's your history with the character, I guess? Let's start with Paul, because he's on the left on Skype, so.
Oh, fantastic.
That makes sense.
And politically.
Yeah.
we've turned into left, right, and center.
There you go.
No, I honestly, Superman was probably, you know, one of my first comics, you know, that I picked up. I remember, you know, the first comics I ever got when my dad, I was sick. My dad went down to the, you know, to the little drugstore that was the only store in town and just bought a bunch of comics off the rack. And I remember, you know, a couple of those were Superman titles. And, you know, I've just been, you know, he's been sort of ubiquitous, you know, he's everywhere. He's sort of part of growing up for people our age, I think. And, you know, I never really followed, you know, like a particular storyline or anything like that. But, I would always just sort of drift in and out and pick up a issue here and there. You know, I really dug the John Byrne reboot, which was borrowed from heavily for Man of Steel. And,
oh yeah.
You know, I just, you know, heck, he's just, you know, he's an amazing character. You know, when I grew up and learned more about him and the, you know, the creators and everything and learned more about the history of it, he becomes even sort of more amazing, you know? I love what people have done with the idea of Superman. You know, Supreme is a fantastic book that plays around with the Superman idea. So, you know, I'm just all in all a big fan. I wouldn't consider myself, you know, the world's greatest Superman fan, but you know, I would never turn away a Superman book, you know.
Yeah. What about you, Corey? What are your feelings about the big red S?
I actually also, and I just remember this recently, that one of my first comic books, probably my first like standard comic book. I mean, I had gotten little mini comics with some action figures.
Yeah.
Probably my first like legitimate comic book was an issue of, I think, Action Comics. And I didn't really care for it. And I think I was a little too young, maybe. And the story was like, it was sort of it was very talky. I don't really remember. I just remember it, you know, there being some like gangsters that shot at Lois and he caught their bullets and he sort of took care of them pretty easily, and you know, it wasn't like there wasn't no big action, so I think it just sort of was like, I just was like, okay. But I did, you know, I certainly grew up on with Super Friends and those little mini comics and obviously the cartoon, and I think while I don't think I have a huge love for the character, there is some sentimentality to him. I mean, like, my father was a reporter,
oh.
and he loved Superman, and we would sort of joke that, you know, that he was secretly Superman, and during the death of Superman, it worked. It got us reading Superman. Like, I was reading it because he was reading it, because he got interested because of the media attention of it. So that was probably my most. That was probably my longest span of actually reading Superman was during that time.
The dark era, according to my
I saw the movies, the Superman movies, and from the Christopher Reeve movies, and always loved him as an actor and his portrayal, and felt that he brought sort of a gentleness to Superman that was never really there in any other version that I ever saw.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of neat, actually. It was kind of touching. So that's me. Again, not the biggest, probably less of a Superman fan, I guess, than Paul, but an affection for him. And I always get stirred up about the story of Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster and how massively screwed over they were.
Yeah.
And that the history behind that, and the what Neil Adams did to try and get them credit, and the ongoing legal battle that is, that labyrinthine legal battle that I still cannot untangle. I still don't understand it.
Yeah,
so convoluted. But so that's I guess that's me.
Cool. What about you, Ian?
I'm a Batman and Hulk diehard fan. I tried in the beginning of my collecting days to get some Superman book going, and I just was bored out of my mind, and I don't know why. I could not get to it at all. And as a comic book, I never went after Superman books at all. If it was World's Finest, that was a different story, because Batman was there, and I really at that point it was okay with me, because it was like a 50-50. But maybe I owned, I don't know, 10 or 5 to 10 books, like kind of random, Superman books that are just whatever. They're not really part of any consistent reading on my part. I always thought the character just offered me nothing as a little child. And even when I got to the movies, I just remember fragments, because I was actually pretty young. I do remember the scene from the movie and going to the movies with the Niagara Falls, and Christopher Reeve was so cool. I mean, I thought that Superman, the theatrical version of Superman, was something I did enjoy. And the other part that just stuck in my head was when he fought the guys in these black, like, disco costumes. you know what I mean? Like, it was like from Studio 52 or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, as a kid, seeing these, like, kind of sequiny, black, tighted outfit people beat the crap out of Superman really bothered me, and actually scared me, and those are really the fragments I have, obviously I did buy the new Justice League, of the new 52, so I'm gonna get into that, and but that's where it's been with Superman and me. I kind of just Superman, and he's there, and he has every right to be, but I just haven't really read much of him,
Yeah. Hey, Ian, you're coming in a little crackly, hearing that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me change the battery on my microphone. You can go ahead.
Cool.
While he's doing that, why don't you tell us your Superman experience?
Okay. Cool. Well, I think out of the four of us, I'm probably the biggest Superman fan. I love Superman. I love what he's supposed to stand for. I've been a fan of the character, not so much the comics, for the longest time. And it's really funny, because I really tell everyone, how like Star Wars was like this movie that like just changed everyone's lives when they were little, and they were like, oh, Star Wars, like there was before Star Wars and there was after Star Wars,
Okay.
And I was definitely one of those people. I loved Star Wars when I was a little kid. But for me, the movie that sort of just like, as a little kid, just kind of just moved me and changed the way I looked at things was that first Christopher Reeve Superman movie. I mean, I'm sure I'd come across the comics at some point before that, but and thought he was really cool or whatever. But it was that movie, and one scene in particular, because I don't know which of you guys know this about me, but when I was five, my father passed away of a heart attack. And obviously, kind of a really traumatic event for like a five-year-old. And the Superman movie came out after that. And there's that scene where he's talking to his dad, you know, after mm-hmm. running home, like beating the train in a race. And he's talking to his dad, and he's like, "Dad, I can do all these things." And, you know, his dad gives him that really, really well-written and well-acted speech about, you know, you are here for a reason. And then he dies of a heart attack. And so there's this little, probably six-year-old me looking at that and just like stunned, you know, that this is happening in a movie. And then just in that moment, it's like, wow, Superman is just like me. Like, mm. Superman is just like me. Like, his dad died of a heart attack, and blah, blah, blah. And then from then on in, the rest of the movie, like, I was just, that was it. You know, I was just mm-hmm. hooked in. And I became very obsessed with Superman. And then even more so, a couple years later, I would get glasses in second grade. And that was it. Like, because that was part of Superman's thing, was that, you know, if you were like what they used to call like a milksop, you know, a mm. nerd or whatever, the Superman embodied this potential that inside of you that nobody else could see, you know what I mean? Or that nobody wanted to pay attention to. So Clark Kent was the sort of regular average guy that everyone picked on, which I did get picked on a lot when I was little. For many different things, one of them being because I didn't have a dad, you know. And then, you know, just imagining that someday I would grow up and become something better than what I was, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I've, you know, kind of read some Superman comics and really liked them, but, you know, I'd graduated beyond that into Marvel. And I became a Marvel head. And then when John Byrne did the Man of Steel revamp, like, that was it, because I was a John Byrne head. Like, I loved John Byrne. Loved, you know, the X-Men and the Alpha Flight and the Fantastic Four that he did. And when the news came out that he was going to revamp Superman, I practically crapped myself. I was just like, oh, my God! You know, I was so excited.
Yeah.
And from then on in, up until, you know, the New 52, I can't say that I've bought every Superman comic that came out, but there was always a Superman book on my pull list, like always. And it's definitely, again, more because of what I see the character standing for than what was in the comics themselves. Because let me tell you, the comics have been through some really, really rough spots in the past 30 or so years after John Byrne left. And there have been some really great highlights, really great stories in there, but it really is like sifting through so much dung, you know what I mean? Because, you know, he's become such a corporate character, but in the end, like, he is something that is very deeply part of my persona, like, just so entrenched in my heart and in my mind that I can't, like, I can never get past him, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Just the whole mystique of him and just what he's supposed to stand for and the effect that that character had on me as a child, you know? So that's,
you know what, getting to your review is going to be a little bit like, I don't know, winter is coming for the people on Game of Thrones or something.
Well, I mean, I don't know. You know, we'll see, because, you also may not know this about me as well, is that I consider that first Christopher Reeve movie, like, that's my favorite movie of all time. Now, I'm not going to say that it's the best movie ever made, but it is my favorite movie of all time. I've seen it at least 15 to 20 times in my life. I've got the Blu-ray, I've got the DVD, I had the VHS, you know, I've gone to see screenings of it, you know, so that first movie, nothing can live up to it, you know. So
sure,
nothing can live up to that movie in my mind. It's not perfect. There's silly moments. There's things that I know are kind of goofy, but that movie, like, I mean, my wife is like, yeah, that's like his favorite. Anybody who's like a close friend of mine knows, like, oh yeah, that first movie. And just Christopher Reeve did something in that movie, and Tom Mankiewicz with the screenplay, and Richard Donner, they did something really fantastic with that movie that just, you know, just moved something inside of me when I was young and continues to do so as an adult. So there's a lot of baggage going into Man of Steel for me, more so than probably any of you. So with that being said, you know, you're with me, you're not talking about like the most I wouldn't say most open-minded, but you're not going to get like an unbiased review from me to a certain extent. That being fair said, enough. So with that being said, because I have a feeling this is going to be a long podcast, because there's a lot to get into.
I've settled in with a nice hot beverage, and I'm
ready. Can you guys hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah, I just
is it any better?
A little better.
Yeah,
it's little. Well, for whatever reason, for the past 2 days, I can't send out emails from my home computer, and
oh, really?
I just did a speed test, it didn't even read the upload.
So oh really?
I only read downloads. So guys, if I do get crackly, or Christian, if you do hear me crackly, I'll just drop out, because I don't want to. I really want to join, but at the same time, I don't want to make this a crackly endeavor. So my connection is kind of eh right now.
Yeah, I mean, you are sounding crackly, but let's work with what we got.
Okay.
That's right.
And, okay. And if you just drop out, then you drop out. If you
drop out,
suffer to the kryptonite of the internet, then you're just done. No going back for Ian. All right, so let's start. Who wants to start? Because I know somebody does, because I know emails with us and Facebook posts and fucking people have been like, oh, blah, blah, blah. So who wants to start?
Where do you start? Where look, do you start?
I saw it. I saw it probably ahead of all of you guys, because I saw a special screening.
You bought the Walmart ticket.
I did. I bought
you
the
You caved in. And you bought the Walmart ticket.
I did. And
you went to Lex Luthor and you got the ticket. Like, you went to the scum of the earth and you traded your soul for the Superman ticket.
And there are two benefits for that. First of all, I saw it ahead of everyone else. And second of all, I actually paid less for the ticket, because it was only, I think it was like $9 for a evening, you know, premiere.
Yeah.
Thing, ticket, which, you know, normally they're like $10.50, whatever. So it's like, okay, the drawbacks are you're buying it from Walmart and you're seeing it for the Walmart crowd. So I actually had to go Christian Horn on the people sitting behind us.
Oh, and I think you might want to explain what that means, because I had to go Christian Horn on a little kid in the theater today.
Yeah, well, the very first time I ever saw a movie with Christian, we went to see. We went out to the movies, and there was somebody talking, and like Christian just stood up and turned around and said, "Will you just shut the fuck up?"
Did I do that?
Yeah, it was great. And like they were instantly like dead silence in the theater, which is it was pretty awesome.
Oh my gosh, I don't know that I would do that today.
I didn't go the full Christian Horn on this. Okay. I went, you know, maybe like a quarter Christian with a twist. And, but you know, there were some people behind us that just were talking it went away. The other downside about it is that before the movie came on, you're treated to this like special Walmart sneak peek of the movie that you're about to watch.
Oh my god!
Oh man!
Like, in case you're quite sold and you're gonna walk out.
Yeah, exactly. And they had this dude interviewing Zack Snyder, who I swear to God was the most awkward interviewer I've ever seen in person or in the guy just. the questions were inane. He was wearing these terrible Walmart clothes. And
Walmart clothes. Did he have a name tag on or something?
He was just like, hey, it's me, and like everyone knew who he was. I didn't know who he was, and it's like, you know, like, you know, what should we be looking for in this movie, Zack Snyder? And I'm just like, we're looking for Superman.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Like,
well, you know, and it was horrible. It was like, and it went on forever. I mean, it was probably maybe 5 to 7 minutes, but it felt like half an hour because I was just like, start the movie, please.
I got something similar to that too, and I went to the Avengers premiere, and it wasn't a Walmart thing though, but there was like a pre-show like interview thing, and I went to the little theater that apparently had everybody from Marvel Studios there, like they were all Marvel employees basically. And so everybody was just talking over it, completely ignoring it. So you couldn't even hear it if you wanted to. And it was just like, oh, whatever.
Yeah. Well, imagine.
They knew it was stupid.
Imagine that done by someone with like a Walmart handicap. And you would have, you know, what I saw. So that was a little ridiculous. However, fortunately, I settled in. You know, I got the drunk idiots behind me to shut up, and then I was able to, you know, enjoy the movie as it were.
Yeah.
You know, my personal take on it, I feel like it was, you know, 80% successful. You know,
80%. Okay.
I'm being generous. I felt like it was like a for the most part a decent reboot of, you know, the Superman, you know, thing for a modern audience. You know, obviously, I guess I'm going for the sense of like, for what they were aiming for, I feel like they came close to target. Now, did I agree with what they were aiming for? No, not necessarily. And why don't we just you know, get,
yeah, well, this is going to be spoiler filled too, by the way. Anybody who's listening, if you have not seen this movie, you need to turn this off right now.
Well, judging by the box office, there's no one who hasn't seen the movie.
Yeah, so, I guess.
You know, I mean, when it comes down to, you know, sort of the big moment there, and I saw what they were going to do with that, I was disappointed, you know? I was more disappointed in...
Well, no, don't jump ahead yet. Let's talk about the beginning. Corey, what about you? What did you think?
I thought the beginning was the best parts. I think there were some interesting things that they were doing, and some of it was, you know, like, so the design of Krypton I thought was cool. And
I loved the design of Krypton, yeah.
Yep, and there were some interesting ideas, like, I mean, this is skipping a little bit ahead, but the reveal the thing with all the Kryptonian DNA, what was that?
Yeah.
The codex.
I like the reveal that it was in his blood, which really made his sort of, one of his nicknames is called the Last Son of Krypton, and I thought that's a great use of that name.
Yeah.
To still be the Last Son of Krypton and still there be other Kryptonians. He's still the lineage is still with him. So I thought that was a neat idea. And the, you know, there was stuff that was interesting. I just felt like it broke down. Even if you isolate and remove every other version of Superman and just look at what's here,
yeah,
I feel like the character that they were establishing by the end of the movie became inconsistent.
Well, I feel like I agree with you, and I feel like there was a lot of plot in this movie being moved along, but not a lot of character development. Do you guys agree with that?
I definitely felt that because, I mean, my main problem with the movie is that they did feel sort of like, I wouldn't say chess pieces, you know, more like checker pieces, you know, being moved around to advance the story and advance the game.
Yeah.
Lois Lane in particular was you know, like... like, okay, I will do a little bit of a jump ahead in here. You know, when the Kryptonians finally, you know, demand that he surrender.
Yeah.
And he hands himself over to them, and they want Lois to go along.
Why?
Why did she need to go on?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Ian, but let's let Ian say what he thought, if you're not too crackly. Ian, what did you think? Because I know that your email, you were like, I loved it. So,
I loved it. Can you guys hear me, though? Seriously, I did a speed test. I'm like kryptonite right now for this podcast. I just did a speed test, and it can't even read, and I'm freaking out.
Yeah, you're pretty much dropping out there. Dude, should we try and hang up and connect again? Or?
No, dude, it's totally not that. It's seriously, like, I can't even send emails from Gmail. So here's what I'm going to do. I will just have to type my thoughts. I got you guys on audio. I'm going to listen to the whole thing because I'm totally into it right now. But I can't keep going like this. It's going to kill the podcast. So. I'm going to listen. No, here.
We need a dissenting opinion.
Yeah, we need somebody to...
I know, but I have Time Warner on the phone now, and I'm going to berate them.
Well,
so you guys keep
tell
keep
Time
going.
Warner that you're sticking up for their product, man.
Yeah,
I know. I wish
tell them that you're up. Superman's last defense.
Exactly. Listen, if your feed comes back stronger, they're able to fix it. Let us know somehow.
I will. I'm going to listen to the whole thing. So I got you guys in the headphones.
Okay. Cool. All right.
I loved it.
I think this is
a ploy. He didn't want to defend himself.
He didn't want us to
he just
jump
opened
on
up his computer and started ripping out stuff from the insides.
Yeah.
He does have defensible opinion there.
Totally sucks because I wanted to hear his take on it. Let me see. For me, well, I was on vacation when it premiered, and I remember when we had planned this trip a long time ago, and of all things, we were going camping. So we're going to be in the, like, middle of nowhere. Like, not the middle of nowhere, but we were going to be disconnected from technology, not near a movie theater. And Amy was like, oh, that comes out when we're going camping. And I was like, what? But we were going to go see some cousins and of Amy's, my wife, up north when we were camping. We went up to the Redwoods. And, you know, and her cousin was like, look, man, if you want to go see Man of Steel, like, it's totally cool. Like, I know that you're like, dying. And I was like, no, family comes first. I was like, but, you know, we were having trouble getting to see a sitter. Getting a sitter to go see it. And I was like, I'm never going to see this movie. And what ended up happening during the trip is my wife got really sick and we had to abandon the camping and we had to go to the cousin's house and she was really sick, couldn't go see the movie. And then I ended up having to do all the driving, like, back down the coast. So I called in sick to work because I was wiped out. I was just exhausted. Yeah. And then, you know, kind of slept in for like half the day. And then finally I was like, well, I'm feeling a little better. Why don't I go see this movie? So Amy and I kind of went to go see it together. Amy's sick. I'm fatigued, but we're feeling good about it. We're finally, and my daughter's in day camp. So she was not abandoned or left at home. But like, I gotta say, like, I was watching this movie and just of all the things on the internet and the reviews that came out and just like, because I could somehow connect to Facebook in the middle of the woods. And, you know, I just kept seeing people like, and Paul, you sent me a message via Facebook. You were like, it's mostly good. There's some not great stuff in there, but it's mostly good. And I was like, mostly good. And Paul is more forgiving than I am.
Yeah.
I don't know what to think. And so I was getting riled up. And so then we're sitting and we're watching it in the theater. And I got to tell you, the first half of the movie, like, I loved it. Like, I was like, this is great. Like, I really dug it. And I got to say, the scene where Jonathan Kent shows Clark the ship for the first time, like, I cried. I actually cried. I got choked up. And Amy was like, but there's a deeper reason to that, because that scene recalls the scene from the first movie, and the dialogue is almost exactly the same, where he's like, you're here for a reason, and, you know, we don't know what the reason is, and he's talking to him like his son. And that scene was what touched me as a child and still does when I see it as an adult. So them kind of sticking in a clone of that scene, and that really got to me, and I was really enjoying it, thinking like, oh, this is good, maybe people were wrong, maybe it was good. And then you guys take a guess what happened that just set me off. Take a guess.
Zod showed up?
No, not Zod. You guys are close. Paul, you take a guess.
I'm assuming the snap of the neck.
Lois
no,
Lane.
Not Lois Lane. No, even Lois, I was like, well, she's, you know. The fucking scene, and this is a big spoiler, so I'm telling you, if you have not watched this movie, where Clark Kent and his parents are going to get hit by a tornado.
Yeah.
And Clark Kent stands by and watches his father get eaten up by a tornado and does nothing. I was almost yelling at the screen. I was like, what are you doing? Like, no, do something. And then he doesn't do anything. And it's just like, what the fuck was that?
There a lot of so many things wrong with that scene. First of all, that a tornado sneaks up on Superman.
That too.
Like that really. And
well, he was arguing with his dad.
Yeah. And going back for the dog, you know. I mean, he didn't even like go back to help, you know, other people. And the thing is that if you've got a son who you know is like somewhat invulnerable, it's like, come on, you know, let him help people.
Yeah.
You know, at that point, you know.
Yeah.
I know, and I know what they were building up there. I know that they're building up, you know, the sort of the father's fear that, you know, something bad is going to happen to their kid, you know. But I feel like they just carried that to the extreme with that scene.
Yeah. Yeah. I was stunned. Like, I was dumbfounded when that happened. I was like, holy shit. What about you, Corey? Did you have any reaction to that?
You know, I didn't, like, it didn't resonate as strongly with me, but you know, you mentioning it, I mean, that is a big deal. That this, as far as I know, this is the first time where in the Superman mythology of his origin, the death of one of his parents could conceivably be blamed on him.
Yeah.
Like, this introduced guilt into his origin, which is a very, you know, Spider-Man and Batman kind of thing to do.
Yeah, and I never really saw Superman as the dude who was guilty.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is like, how does his mother not be like, you could have fucking saved him, and you just stood there and didn't do anything? You know, and it's like there's that shot of Kevin Costner like standing in front of the tornado and he like lifts up his hand like, no, it's all right. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me with this? Are you kidding me with this? Like, I was, and it's so funny, Corey, because you posted on Facebook something about like Mark Waid, you know, tweeting that his heart got broken by Man of Steel, and I thought that was the moment that Mark Waid was talking about, and I guess it turns out that was not it, because I went and read his review after I got out of the movie. But to me, that was just like, no, not buying it. And I was sitting in the movie theater trying to justify it, like in my head, like, well, maybe, you know, he's trying to listen to his dad. And I'm like, no, man, especially for somebody like me, or even Superman, who's lost their father, he didn't know he was from Krypton, okay, at that point. But what I'm saying is, like, somebody who's lost their father, I'm looking at that and I'm stunned.
You don't sit there and watch them die.
You don't. You just do not do that. Especially, and Corey, you were very smart to say, like, taking all the other aspects of the Superman mythos out of the movie. But especially when you've seen, like, Smallville, and I think, like, one of the big season finales, there was, like, a tornado, and Clark had to go stop it. When you've seen something like that in other media, and he does a better job in this dinky little TV show instead of this big budget, it's hard for me to go like, I mean, what were they trying to get with that? Like, that his his dad was like, he learned sacrifice because his dad gave his. That doesn't make any sense. Well, that's.
I think the idea is that he, because then he's going around the world and secretly saving people and going from location to location. Like, you know, he couldn't save his father, so he's going to save everybody else. Like.
But he could save his father. Like, he didn't even try.
What's that?
No, he could save his father. He couldn't even try. He didn't even try.
Well, that's it. You know, I mean, I'm not saying it what they did worked.
No.
Understand.
The thing is that it only makes sense in the context of the conversation that he's having with Zod at the time when they do that flashback. You know what I mean? Like, he's trying to make a point, you know, in that, in the conversation that he's having there. And, like,
which conversation?
He's talking to Zod. He's having a conversation with Zod when they do that flashback to that moment. And he says, you know, and then he basically says, you know, well, I allowed my father to die I let my father die because of blah blah blah. Or he's talking to Zod, or he's talking to Lois. He's talking to somebody else. It's one of those things where the flashback makes sense in the context of the conversation, but again, that sort of comes back to that problem we're having of, like, with the character development, that they're just being moved around on a board. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, this flashback had to happen so that, you know, this conversation makes sense, you know? Yeah. And again, you know, I'm not a big fan of characters being moved around, you know, like it was very sort of graceless and, you know, inorganic in the way that they did that.
I can't remember the last time I was enjoying a movie so much and then something happens in the movie that just, like, literally felt like a punch in the stomach where I was just like, what? And then, okay, so I got past that. And then I was like, okay, I've got to try and justify this in my mind. In the scope of things, I got to get past it. I got probably another hour and a half of this, and hopefully it doesn't get worse. Which, in my opinion, there was nothing else in the movie that was really that... even the whole Zod... Yeah, there was nothing... Yeah, that was that jarring to me, where I was like, holy shit. You know, it's just... You know, and if that scene had not been in the movie, I probably would have liked this movie a lot more than I did. But that one scene, and Mark Waid even said, like, oh, I thought that was a good piece of writing. I'm like, no, it's not. Especially if you've lost somebody. Like, no, you would never do that in a million years. Especially if you had the ability to do something. You would not let the man who raised you, who's taught you all your morals, you would not let him die like that. You would not. It just wouldn't happen. I don't buy it. And so that was, like, the very first big thing for me where I was like... And it was so messed up because it's like the movie moved me with that one scene and then it just destroyed me with that other scene, you know?
Yeah.
And not because... I was sad that Jonathan Kent had died. You know what I'm saying? But because I was like, you're an asshole. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, Superman's an asshole. You know?
Yeah. It's really strange too, because it flies in the face of sort of everything that Jonathan and Martha know about him at that point. You know what I mean? Like, he's already saved the kids in the bus. Like, they know, like, they sort of understand, you know, that this guy has limitless power and potential, and that he wants to use it to help people. I mean, in a way, it's like, that's just, why would Jonathan Kent ever, you know, tell him no for that? I mean, I know they were trying to do something different, and they went, I think, just a little too far with that, because it just went past the point where it was believable.
Yeah. What about you,
and
Corey?
Again, a tornado snuck up on Superman.
Well, you know, sometimes they come out of nowhere. I mean, there was a part of me that was willing to let that go. But there is also a part of me where it's like, and Corey, jump in. I feel like I'm hogging the whole conversation. There's a part of me that's like, Jonathan Kent is a fucking moron because there's a tornado coming and his son could easily go get that stupid dog. Okay, dog lovers, I'm very sorry, but they go back for a dog, not a little kid, a dog. All right, I know you all love your dogs out there, but it's a dog. Anyway, he goes back, and I think even at one point, Clark moves to go, and yeah, Jonathan stops him.
Yeah, he steps out and starts to look, and then Jonathan holds his hand up, and then Kent looks back at the crowd under the bridge.
Yeah.
And then get his father.
Yeah.
And he just stands there.
And again, it's a tornado. It's insane. You can't tell me that he couldn't do something quickly and no one would
exactly,
you know, that there's not enough chaos going around them that no one would have noticed it.
Exactly.
Or maybe, you know, like Martha could, like, you know, like pull her top off and run around.
You're really into this disrobing thing tonight, Corey.
Oh, is there a theme?
I think there's a theme on your end.
You know, I'm naked right now. Is that
as long as I can't see it, that's fine with me. If your wife is okay with you Skyping in nude, then I'm fine with it. Yeah, so that was like where it all started to go downhill a little bit for me. And I was really enjoying it up to that point. And then I was like, snap out of it. Like literally that was the moment. I don't think there's been a moment in a movie where I was very much like, get out of your head. Try and enjoy this. You know what I mean? Just go with it. And then... And it almost recovered for me, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, do you guys, you know?
Look, there were a couple of moments that pulled me out of the thing. You know, definitely that, and again, the whole Lois Lane being aboard the ship. I mean, let's face it, the only reason she was there was to get Superman out of the jam that he was going to be in.
Yeah.
You know, there was no reason for her to be on board that ship.
I totally agree with you.
At all. And, you know, and that irritated me, you know, but whatever. Yeah, I mean, let it slide. But then when you get to that ridiculous climax.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where it's... And especially because it was so well done, the climax was so well done, but so like
hollow,
sort of poorly thought out.
Yeah,
I mean that it just I mean that sort of undid a lot of the good stuff that came before.
Yeah,
you know, starting with the fact that like you're taking Superman away from Metropolis for a good part of the climax.
Yeah.
You know, you're sending him to the other side of the world where there doesn't seem to be any sort of like population that are under immediate threat or something like that, but you're sending him there. I mean, I felt like that world engine thing, whatever, was just, again, an excuse to move the piece around. Just, okay, we're going to take Superman out of the equation so that we'll have some stakes for the characters who are over here in Metropolis.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting, though. I mean, there was a lot of that, like, you know, like the Professor Emil Hamilton and, you know, the General and the, you know, there were a lot of other characters which... You know, to me, while I was watching it, I kept thinking like, okay, I'm okay with this because a lot of the focus of the Superman comics through the years has been his friends and him helping his friends and them helping him out. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. So I didn't really have a problem with a lot of that. But the biggest thing is like, there's this huge fight in the middle of Smallville, like right in the town, and it's like he's not, I mean, he says one line, get indoors. And I'm like, yeah, get indoors because you guys are about to fucking level the town. And
get indoors so the ceiling can fall. Yeah,
so I can throw this dude through the wall and, you know, possibly paralyze you for the rest. You know, the thing that was, I just felt like, okay, look, I mean, I just felt like.
Even if you don't watch a lot of superhero movies, the number one rule is you always get the bad guy away from the populated areas. I mean, come on. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to think about that, especially when you're in Smallville and there's these cornfields right next to you.
Yeah, exactly. And
the reason they didn't is exactly, Paul, what you were talking about the incredibly transparent manipulation of characters, is that they just needed to have the characters blow up and wreck a lot of stuff. And if they're in a cornfield, it's boring.
Yeah.
So they need to stay in the town, or they need to be in Metropolis, and they need to crash through six skyscrapers at a time. Because, you know, regardless of how many people are dying and you know, the characters seem particularly Superman seems completely unconcerned about it.
Yeah.
And because they need that visual spectacle, and that's it. So, you know, again, to me, that is the biggest failure of the movie, is that the character consistency is shattered for the sake of visual spectacle, and that is not storytelling. You can just create a video game.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I saw...
Especially when one of the major themes of the movie is Superman valuing human life.
Standing for hope.
His journey is supposed to be a representation of hope.
Yeah.
And that whole... And which I thought was a clever thing about explaining what the S is and why, you know, why he wears an S. And I thought it was a nice touch. And then they basically just throw it away because they say that the movie's... Essentially, they're saying that the movie's about hope when it isn't about hope at all. It's about destroying things.
Yeah. And it's funny because I saw your... I didn't read your thoughts on Facebook until after I saw the movie. And then, you know, you noted a lot of, like, stuff that we're talking about, which is, like, why are they fighting in the middle? Why doesn't Superman... And then somebody was like, because Zod would never allow him. And I'm like, well, did you miss that part where Zod was kind of, like, having problems with his senses and couldn't figure out what was going on? You know what I mean? I mean, if there's...
And that's probably true, but... Wouldn't Superman try? Why would he be like, oh, he's probably going to fly back. I'll just destroy millions of lives here.
yeah. And it's just, I really felt that Henry Cavill, like, he had no chance to be like Superman. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, and I felt like he was really likable, and I think he was great. But, you know, it's really interesting how passive Superman was in this movie.
He did nothing. For the biggest part, except fight, you know.
Yeah,
he was a punching bag.
Yeah, and I feel like I just like, and this is the thing, is it's so weird because I can still say that I liked this movie because of the first half, and then once you and some of the fighting stuff is so spectacular, you're just like, wow, this is amazing. But at the same time, the end of the movie, Superman is just like, it's all he's concerned with is punch. It's like Doomsday, you know, the death of Superman. It's like, we're just going to punch the shit out of each other. And there's no, you know, there's none of this, you know, they say it in the movie, like, you know, there's this whole, I think her name is like Zaora in the movie. I can't remember. Where she's like, your morality makes you weak. And I'm like, but there's no evidence of that. There's no evidence of him throwing himself in front of people to, you know, there's
other than the oil rig rescue at the beginning.
Yes. Or him handing himself over to the Kryptonians without a fight. Like yes. But the battle, there is no evidence of him being selfless. There's no evidence of him having any concern for anything but stopping the beating the shit out of the bad guys.
And by the way, back to what she said, there was a lot of monologuing that went on in this movie.
You're right. There was a ton of exposition. Yeah, that too. That monologuing and exposition too. And it's just so funny because there's so many things that I just really like Mark Wade. What did he call it? Disaster porn.
Yeah.
Like that sequence at the end of like it's like Superman saved us. It's like saved us. Have you? He didn't do shit. He the city's a wreck. Like
yeah, I mean
it looks like Nagasaki.
In Superman Returns, I mean Brandon Routh, like I mean at least they had him. Didn't like he blow up some things with like his heat vision to keep things from falling down on people. I mean, it wouldn't have really taken that much. It would have been, and if anything, that would have made it cooler because it's like he doesn't just have to worry about defeating the bad guy. He has to worry about protecting the city. You know, I mean, like they really
visual, and it's something visually that he can do. Yeah. Besides just punching each other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It felt like a really like a big missed opportunity there. Even his choice to kill Zod, it felt like a really missed opportunity because it's like, you know, he didn't try to figure out something different. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
He never tried to look for an alternative. It was just like, oh, this first instance of him trying to kill somebody, even though we've been killing hundreds of people.
Yeah, like, even though millions of people have, like, died. Yeah.
But now, because I'm looking at them, I care. And, you know, why couldn't he just pick him up and fly off since he had him pinned? It's like, he didn't try. He's like, oh, I can't, you know, it's like,
yeah.
Good effort. Good trying.
Yeah. And no sense. You're absolutely right. Yeah,
and again, it goes back to him being like sort of a passive character who was being manipulated. And you're very right. It's very, in a way, this is like this movie is a great video game.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because you essentially you've got a main character who's sort of being put through these motions in order to do these things to get to the end of the story.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Corey, are you still there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. I just got a weird notice on. Yeah, and to me, the really big disappointment, like the things that you never saw is like Zod shows up, and there's never a thing where Clark or Cal or Superman is like, oh, wow. Like these people, like he's never bargaining with Zod. He's never saying like there's a better way, like we don't have to do this, like we're Kryptonians, like let's be together, you know what I'm saying? It seems like Zod is more like, hey, you're one of us, and Clark is never just like, no, I'm, you know, he never doubts himself, and he never, you know, at the end of the movie, he never, like in the final climax, he's never like, Zod, you know, like it doesn't have to go down this way. There's all you needed was a couple of lines of dialogue where it's like, we could be brothers, we could build things better. He never tries to convince him, you know, and I guess there's an argument to be made that maybe he's beyond convincing already because he is the one that killed my father and, you know, he, you know, was sentenced to the Phantom Zone. But there's no, like, in my mind, it's sort of the better... What's that?
There's no effort on his part.
Yeah. He doesn't even try to be... to reform him or say, like, look, your world died and this is a new world and we can do so... You don't have to... Like, it's just all thrown away and... And there's a really good monologue that Zod has at the end where he says, like, you know, it was my life to save Krypton, to do something with Krypton and to be the defender of Krypton or whatever he says.
Right.
And
right.
It's just delivered like flat and angry. And you could have had a real moment of like sympathy for him, even though he has to go down. You could have had that moment of like, I understand where you're coming from, but you want to blow up the earth. And you know what I'm saying? Like, he could have been on the verge of tears, like, you know, anything. And there's just no heart to the whole movie. There's no, except for Kevin Costner, you know, there is nothing there.
He delivered, I think, probably the best, he had the best delivery of the whole movie when he, during that scene you were talking about, Christian, and when he shows him the ship that they found him in, and he says, "Does this mean you're not my father?" And the way he delivers, that you know, of course you're my son.
Yeah,
I thought it was just so nice, so perfect, and really nice moment.
And that's why it made me cry like a big super wuss. I mean, I just I loved it. So, And that's the thing, though, is like, I can't say that I hated this movie. You know what I mean? Like, there's a part of me that liked so much of it in there, but there's also a part of me that's kind of angry because they were on the trajectory to make a really solid Superman movie, and then they just crapped on it.
You know how I feel about this movie as a, and just thinking about it as a teacher. This movie is that kid who you know who's like just brilliant in class. You know he's capable of great things. Who like basically just gets C's because he doesn't care.
That's
what I felt about this movie. You know, because you know I feel like everyone involved here is very talented and. Yeah. You know, it just, they didn't take just that little bit of extra effort to make it, you know, something just really special, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And to me, it almost seems like that finale, the end, was like somebody saw the Avengers and was like, we just got to have buildings, like, collapsing and buildings. But what they missed were the parts in the Avengers where Captain America stands on top of the car and he's like, you help the civilians, you know, you and they're like, who are you? And then he beats some aliens up and they're like, oh, you know what I'm saying?
There's
a scene in the building where, you know, because I've seen some people like be like, well, in the Avengers I'm sure millions of people died and blah blah blah, but at least you get a sense that they're trying to stop people from getting killed. And Superman, you don't get that. He's not trying to stop people from getting killed. He just wants to fight.
And, you know, interesting, too, in the Avengers, you have, you know, the heroes of the movie outside of your superheroes are like your fire department, your police department, you know, your public employees. The heroes in Superman are soldiers, you know, it's military. You know, I mean, outside of the military, you don't really see any. I mean, I didn't see any fire department or.
I remember
or at least I don't.
One police officer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that bank had a security guard. You know, that he got. but you know, you don't. You didn't really see the people on the ground the way you did in the Avengers, and that was a really smart move on Joss Whedon's part in the Avengers. I think to bring. I mean, you had these big, sweeping, you know, fights that are going on throughout the city, but a lot of it was also going on at ground level.
Yeah.
And Superman, the only stuff that was going on at ground level was the stuff with Perry White and Jenny Olsen.
Yeah.
And the dude who what's his name, the character, he was Lombard, is it?
Yeah, Steve Lombard.
Steve Lombard, who was from the
comics.
You know, from the comics back when Clark was a TV reporter.
Again,
you know, nice touches. I mean, clearly, you know, they're well-versed in their Superman, you know, mythology and everything.
Yeah.
It would have been nice if it had connected a little more to the heart.
Yeah. I really... You know, and the other thing is, you know, for all we're talking about the fighting and how spectacular the fight scenes, like when you get towards the end, when skyscrapers are just going down, and who's the guy that scored the film?
Zimmer.
Is it Zimmer?
Tom Zimmer.
Where it's like, first of all, talking a little bit about the score, I really feel that there were certain segments of the score that were directly lifted from the last Tron movie. I mean, I was like, whoa, this sounds like Tron, like you know.
It was the percussion heavy, you know, like lots of drums.
There was some synthesizer in there. I mean, big time.
By the way, Sheila E., one of the drummers in Superman.
Are you serious?
Wow.
Well, it was, maybe they used her for Tron as well, because I gotta say, like, there were scenes where I was like, wow, this sounds a lot like Daft Punk's score for Tron. And then, but by the end of the movie, it's like, forget about the skyscrapers, you've just got that percussion where it's like, and it's just like, it's just so overbearing, and it's like, please, I don't even think this is a generational thing. After a while, it's like, this is too much. It's stop. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, especially in sort of a post 9/11 world where it's like, you see the buildings coming and it's just like, okay, stop. And I don't know if it was Mark Wade or another reviewer who was like, you know, the guys from Independence, they were like, whoa, dude, you went a little too far. Like, you know, like it was too much for me. I was just like, just stop already, you know.
It did go for a very long time.
It did.
I mean, you know, when there's a shot of Superman flying, just dragging Zod's face through skyscrapers, it's just like, really? This is how he's handling this?
Yeah, exactly. So I just, it's really funny because like with Batman Begins, I remember thinking like really liking all the Bruce Wayne stuff, and I like Batman Begins. I really like that movie. But then once he becomes Batman, I remember becoming a little less interested. Like, oh, this kind of isn't interesting. And this is almost sort of what happened with this movie, where it was like, all right, well, and it just seems like, is that what? I mean, it devolved into like a Michael Bay, not even a Michael Bay, because at least Michael Bay, as crappy as the humor is, at least he tries to do funny stuff, you know? Like, yeah. There was no levity in this whatsoever, you know?
That's true. He smiled once, and it was a quick cutaway.
Yeah.
And there were like two attempts at sort of jokes that kind of were like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
And you mentioning Michael Bay, I wanted to talk a little bit about the camera work.
Yeah.
Because I found that really terrible.
Oh, really?
They basically lifted the camera technique of Battlestar Galactica.
Uh-huh.
Or the new Battlestar Galactica, or the newer version. But where that, it was interesting and made sense, and they used it, you know, the choices of when to use it was savvy.
Yeah.
And they were accentuating like this is in space, and they were playing with the concept of no gravity, and this was just, we just feel like having shaky camera and zooming abruptly.
Yeah.
Really no reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
So I just found that really distracting and
it's
that no justification whatsoever.
Yeah, that was a definite. I know that was Zack Snyder's like sort of, that was one of his first things going in. Was he's like, yeah, I want this to look handheld.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, why? and actually that was well, because you know, he wanted to do a movie that was like big in scope, yet you know, shooting it handheld style makes it feel more immediate and like documentary style. That was actually one of the things that sold them on using him as a director.
Really?
It's an interesting idea, but I just thought that the execution was just terrible. I mean, you missed stuff, you know, you just lost stuff, and it was just distracting. And that's an interesting idea. I thought the execution just dropped the idea totally.
Yeah, I really think that, while some of the stuff, the fighting stuff was spectacular, I really feel that, like, there were definitely moments where I was like, whoa, like, what is happening right now? Who's fighting who? I'm not, you know, and it's just like, and like, I get that there's comic fans out there who are like, I mean, it seems like a lot of comic fans are just freaking out over it and loving it,
well,
you know?
Yeah, it's just funny, I just want to tell you something I ran across looking at this. It's a team at a group called Watson Technical Consulting. Modeled and anticipated the damage done to Metropolis on that last battle. They're estimating 129,000 confirmed dead, 250,000 missing, 1 million injured.
Jesus Christ.
Impact comparable to the Nagasaki nuke, and monetarily $750 billion in physical damage.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, why do you want Superman hanging around in Metropolis? Like, get him as far away from here as possible. Like,
for the Smallville battle, they estimated that 87% of the damage was caused by friendly fire.
Oh my God! Like, that's. But what I don't, you know, I don't get like it seems like so many people have been like, yeah, this is Superman, this is like what so many comic fans, and like now Superman's cool, and I'm like, I don't Like, no, it's like, is this what you want out of a superhero movie? Is just people punching each other? I mean, even some of the more lackluster or lower end, like Blade or, you know, superhero movies, have more to them than just kicking each other's ass. You know what I'm saying? And it seems like somehow, like, the savagery of his fighting style or something has equated to, like, yeah, this is what we were waiting for. And I was like, I was waiting for the first half and not necessarily... You know what I'm saying? It's just, yeah. I don't get, like, maybe I'm old. I don't know. I don't see this as, like... It's not cool to me. I enjoyed parts of it, but when you're looking at it and people are saying, like, oh, it's sci-fi and they want to make it more realistic, it's like, but that's not the superhero universe that I want to live in. I want to live in the universe, which isn't much safer maybe, where, you know, Captain America and Iron Man and the Hulk are looking out for me, because at least they seem to have some, you know, pathos to them of like... that there's something important to their core, and Superman, that was gone a lot of it in this movie.
If I had to pick a Superman universe to live in, I would want to live in the Ultimate Superman universe, or our All-Star Superman universe.
Yeah, it would be great.
You know, because there's a sense of wonder there that never really. I mean, the Krypton stuff was great. You know.
Yeah.
I always think of Superman as also, in addition to being like amazingly powerful, he's also the smartest guy in the room, you know.
Yeah.
And that never really came across here. Maybe a little bit toward the end, you know, where he's you know, destroying the drone, you know, that they sent after him, and you know, there's a little bit sense of like, well, he's definitely smarter than the people around him, but his intelligence never really came full front in this movie.
I hate that scene too. I mean, it's such a stupid, clumsy transition from that murder scene.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, now we're supposed to be happy. Now he's over it, and oh well, everything's fine now.
I mean, yeah,
it's,
yeah.
That's stupid.
And plus, he's getting more privacy than we are.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Well, he's Superman. I mean,
but on that clumsy delivery, that or not even delivery, but just that stupid line of the soldier. Yeah, I think he's kind of hot. Like, come on, right? Like, she would say that to her superior. And you know, one of that scene actually made me realize, because when he takes off right in front of the general, and it's like this huge sonic boom.
Yeah,
it's like Christopher Reeve Superman. He would just kind of like levitate off.
Yeah,
and this Superman, he has to like blast off, and it's you know,
he's compensating.
Eardrums. Yeah, he's totally compensating.
Yeah.
It's not like his power is he's not able to levitate, because during the fight with Zod, he's levitating. Like at one point, the floor breaks under him, and he just kind of floats there. So it's like he's clearly choosing to show off and be a big jerk when he flies away.
Yeah. It's really funny, because at the end of the original, the first Superman movie, there's a scene that kind of says it all, like when he drops Lex Luthor in the prison, and he kind of like, and you know, it's corny. The warden comes out and he's like, the world is safe now again, Superman, thanks to you. And you know, Christopher Reeve, he's floating away, and he kind of like cocks his head, and he goes, he's like, we're all on the same side, you know? And it's like, that's so refreshing. And I don't even know, maybe it's because times have changed, because are we all on the same side? Like, if they're sending drones to spy on me, are we on the same side? Like, and he's like warning the general at the end of the movie. He's like, you know, let's not fuck with each other, or I'm on your side. You know, it almost seemed like Superman was like warning the U.S. government, like, you better stay off my back, or...
Oh, it's exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, and it's like... Really? Like, instead of reassuring them and being like, go ahead, send up as many drones as you want, you know, you're not going to get my secret, you know, doing something different, you know. Did you guys catch, there's a couple other, like, little points that, did you guys catch, like, the whole religious versus evolution thing in there? Which I found, like, really strange.
Look, hey, I like Jesus, I like Superman, but they're like steak and chocolate, you know? They don't necessarily have to go together.
Well, I don't really have a problem with him going to the church and stuff like that, like seeking counsel from a priest. Okay, like, I mean, it's already been established. I forget if it's Lutheran or Protestant or how he got the name Clark Kent, right? But I don't have a problem with that. But then there's this whole speech that the female villain gives where it's like evolution always wins in the end and you will die because evolution. And I was like, dude.
Yeah, I didn't quite follow what she was saying. I was
like, well,
she was cool. I liked that character.
And yeah.
I thought she was good, but
yeah,
that bit, I was like, wait, what? Like, I didn't catch what she was responding to or what came from, where that came from or what prompted that or what the point was or anything.
Well, she was gloating, of course. Like, that was monologuing, like what Paul was talking about. But it just seemed like really blatant, like, wow, are we saying that, like, Christians, I mean, Christian, Superman, Freudian slip, Superman is like religious? Like, he's like creationism?
This movie was marketed heavily toward Christians and churches. There's actually a website. Yeah, there's a website there for like sermon notes that people could use to relate to this. And they actually invited ministers to early screenings of this movie. It was heavily marketed to the religious community.
It's really funny that you mention that because, I mean, obviously, whatever, there's religious underpinnings to the story of Superman. We all know that, right? Like, we all know that, Moses and Jesus Christ and send your son. But it's just interesting to me because while I was watching the end of the movie and maybe because that little bit of, him going to church and then the evolution thing, at the end, I was really like, it reminded me of the Passion of Christ, where it's just like relentless. Like, it's, I get it. I get that they're destroying buildings. I get that the city is being blown up. Like, I get it. And after a while, I was just like, just stop, you know? And that's exactly like I felt about the Passion of Christ. I was just like, I get it. Like, I get that he suffered for it. Like, you know what I mean? It just felt, like, relentless. And I was just like, stop. I was just like, please, just, you know. I mean, towards the end of the movie, I really, really was like, just stop, you know. And I don't know. There's just so many things that I was just like, I just felt like the movie just kept, as it went on towards the end, just kept pushing down on me instead of lifting me up and feeling like, oh, this is so great. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't, it didn't uplift me at all. There was another point I kind of wanted to talk about. Is there anything else that you guys, there's something else that was bugging me about the movie. And, but this is weird because it's like, I'm constantly, I feel like we're trashing it, but there was something about it that I enjoyed, you know?
I probably would watch a Krypton movie.
Yeah.
And that'd be cool.
I almost, like, I'm on the verge of buying the, like, there's a book coming out to this week, which is, I think, the art or, like, the making of, and I'm, like, this close to buying it because I loved so much of the Krypton stuff, and I felt that there's so much great visual stuff in there, like, you know, the villain's armor. That was some cool looking stuff, you know. But, you know, in the end, it's like, I really wish I could say I loved this movie, but I can't say that. I can say that I didn't hate it. I mean, despite all the railing I've been doing, like, I didn't hate it. I think it, but,
well, like the kid in the class who gets the C when he could get the A, you know, I only rail because I care.
It's true. It is true. And I don't know. There's a part of me that just, that feels like I really, like, when I left, I was like, I want to see it again. A, I do want to see it again for some reason. And B, I was like, I might even buy the Blu-ray when it comes out. Like, I liked something. There was something in there that I liked and that was better than Superman Returns, you know. And it's just, but I can't get, there's so much towards the end where I was just like, oh my gosh, like, really? And I there's going to be a second one. And
oh, absolutely.
I just hope that they, you know, I just hope that they inject it with a little more. That's part of what I wanted to say. You know, it's like that movie, John Carter, just got thrashed and didn't make any money and blah, 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 blah. And there was so much more heart and, like, you know, lovable characters in that movie than there were in the Superman movie, where it's like, I mean, even Lois Lane in this movie, it's just like, she's kind of flat. Everyone's just kind of like, you know, and it's just disheartening because Lois Lane, you know, I saw some people saying like, oh, Lois Lane, she's not going to be fooled by a pair of glass. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's something that we haven't really talked about. Like, what do you guys, A, what do you think about, I know kind of what you think about, like, Zod being killed, but, like, what are your, like, real thoughts, like, your deeper thoughts about that? Because we've only touched on it. And then what do you think about the whole secret identity thing just going out the window?
Well, it's not out the window. It's just that, at least at the end of the movie, that they establish that Lois just knows, you know, from the beginning, from the outset. And, you know, that's another bit I didn't quite get, that she just sort of magically leaps backwards through his flashbacks, but we never really, like, how did she connect those dots? She just made up fictitious names. It's not like, you know, what common thing did she, what thread did she, you know? But yeah, I guess it's kind of minor, but
she's a reporter, Corey. She won the Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of, you know, the lazy, it's like,
yeah,
you
know, yeah, no, I agree.
Thing. It's like, well, he's a detective. Oh, okay, great.
I don't feel bad about that, actually. I mean, if anything, it's kind of, it's nice to sort of throw away the whole having to hide himself from her kind of thing that, you know, in a really, I don't know. It's like we've had sort of enough of that, you know. I'm okay with that.
It basically, did away with the love triangle of Clark, Superman, and Lois. And yeah, I think it's fine. It's there. That's been explored plenty of times elsewhere.
They stretched that out for, like, you know what, 10 years on Smallville. You know, so you know, this. I was actually pretty good with that choice. And as far as, you know, as far as killing Zod, you know, again, I felt like it was just sort of the weak choice in terms of, like, writing, you know. I mean, I felt like that was the writer making the decision there. I did, like, there were moments there where I really felt like the characters were moving toward doing something, but then the story got in the way. And Zod's death totally felt, I mean, as far as him killing, you know, I've heard people say, well, you know, Superman never kills, you know, and it's like, well, there's kind of a precedent for this. I mean, because, well, if you think about Superman 2, you know, unless he had some sort of, like, you know, magical phantom zone generator down at the bottom of that thing, you know, when he threw them down, they died. You know, I wasn't a horribly. I mean, I was a little upset by it, but mostly, again, because it just felt like a lazy thing to do.
Well, yeah.
I agree. I wasn't. I the idea of Superman killing, I'm not. While I don't think it obviously is the most consistent take on Superman. I don't mind. You know, they're obviously creating their own Superman, and if this is a world where Superman has to kill from time to time, okay, fine. But I do not think that they supported it at all. I think
it was not his last,
especially because right after he murders, he's so upset by it. If he just did it and he was like, well, it had to be done, I might be a little more like, well, I guess he's not too broken up about
it. Yeah. Why is he broken up about it? And that's why I wanted...
If he's so remorseful, then he would have tried much harder to find another solution.
Exactly.
I felt such a huge disconnect.
But, and that's the thing, that, and I think that's where the writing really failed. That scene, too, is like, well, like I was saying before, it's like, why is he remorseful? Is he remorseful because he has to kill? Is he remorseful because he has to kill a Kryptonian? Is he remorseful? Yeah. Like, what? There's no background to that, and it's just like, he never says in the movie, like, I don't kill. Like, in the first movie, he goes, I never lie, and that's why in the second movie, when he lies, it's like, oh shit, he lied, you know what I mean? So, I mean, it's
Yeah, really, really interesting that by the end of the movie, he's still, like, you've just spent, like, 2 hours with this guy, but he's still a Cipher, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Especially that graveside scene, and he has that line, and it was dropped on the floor, you know? I don't know what it is, but something about it. I don't even remember what the line was, but she set him up, Diane Lane said something, and then he responded, and it was just the most, it was, like, so hollow.
Yeah, I mean, the whole, it's really funny because I think Mark Waid was upset about the Zod killing, and I think he talked a lot about, like, well, it's, you know, his victory isn't earned and all this stuff, and I didn't have a problem with Superman killing. As a matter of fact, like in the John Byrne revamp, he actually is forced to kill Zod. Like, he sees no other way, and when he killed Zod, I wasn't like, but like, to me, it's like he's got his heat vision and he's gonna kill like 5 people, and it's like, there's like a million people that they just, you know, like, he's really broken up about like 5 people, and it's like, it just, the scope doesn't matter.
They were museum goers. They were a higher quality of people.
Yeah.
They're like art. They can't die.
Yeah, and it's also funny, like, addressing the secret identity thing, like, it's so funny because that's something that I really felt like, well, I mean, obviously they got rid of it for a while with Lois when he married her, you know, and I just felt like that was... there's obviously a precedent for it in the comics, and the fact that he does, but not from the beginning. So, but I had no problems with it because I always thought that after a while, you know, maybe in the modern world, like, you know, there's the whole secret identity thing. I don't think it's silly, but I think, I mean, I do get the whole, like, oh, I've got to have my downtime, you know, to hang with my peeps, you know, so when I'm not being super. But, yeah, there was definitely, I wasn't, like, as offended by it as I thought I was going to, as I would imagine that somebody who knew me and knew that I loved Superman would think that I, you know, like, mm-hmm. I was cool with that. And, yeah, but there's just so much.
One of the arguments that I've heard said is that this movie is setting Superman up to be the Superman that everybody knows, you know, so that now that he's killed, he knows he mustn't ever do that again, and you know, maybe, but it doesn't,
yeah,
you know, again, it's not that he killed, it's the execution.
Yeah, but again, that's an argument for, like, you know, whenever a first superhero movie comes out and it's not so great, like the first X-Men movie. Or right. The first, you know, and they're like, well, the sequel's going to be, don't worry, they set it up, now they're going to have money, and it's like, no, your first movie should be good, you know, and I don't know, man, I think there was a lot to like in the first half, and I thought a lot of the design was beautiful, even the costume didn't bug me as much as I thought it was going to be, although why he's got a belt buckle right in the middle of
for nothing,
is ridiculous. I mean, if you're going to go with the whole conceit that Kryptonians wear spandex and capes, what is the big deal with him having trunks? They don't have to be Speedos or tights, yeah, or, you know, whatever.
Especially since, if you think about it, he's really wearing Kryptonian underwear anyway.
Yeah, exactly. It's just skin-tight long johns, you know. You know, the skin suit or whatever. Yeah.
I did think it was funny when Zod yanked him by the cape and flung him around.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. There were so many, like, I'm watching the beginning of the movie, especially the Krypton stuff, and I'm like, oh, that's from John Byrne's World of Krypton, and that's from John Byrne's Man of Steel, and oh, that's from Mark Waid's Birthright, and you know, there's so many, like, little things. Oh, look, there's a LexCorp truck, you know what I mean? And yeah, there were so many, like, things that were taken straight from the comics, and like people getting upset that he stole clothes from a clothesline. I'm like, really? Come on, like, that's, you know, that pales in comparison to, like, letting his father fucking die in front of, you know.
But that did, I mean, obviously that scene happened before that, and that did kind of bother me. I was like,
why did that bother you? He's just pilfering clothes.
Because when so much time in the movie is given to his both fathers saying that he is of a higher standard. He's going to be an example. He's going to be something that humans strive for. Everything sets him up to be on a higher level, ethically, morally, and physically. And so what does he do? He steals and he murders.
Yeah.
Wow. He really lived up to his expectations.
Yeah. You know, I think you're right. I think it would have made more sense, like, if he had gone to a Goodwill bin or something, or.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's right.
Because they were just like these poor country people. It's like, like, stole from, like, you know, rude people, you know, jerks or whatever. It's like, you had to steal from, like, they were just doing their laundry outside.
Man.
He was even shopping. He, like, checked the socks. He was like, nah. Oh, here, look, I'll just steal from the truck.
Oh, my God. That's so funny. Yeah, no, I mean, that's a good point. I get that. I was kind of willing to let that go until you mentioned that. Like, yeah, I just.
Actually, the clothes belonged to one of the guys that he saved on the oil rig.
He's like,
this was sort of his payment for.
Okay. He left a note. He's like, you're welcome.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, or he could have left a couple of bucks, a couple of soap.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, it's really funny to me is like the one scene. And it's, you know, I guess it's unfair to compare it to the Donner. You know, people are going, oh, the Donner. But the other thing that I want to say my last point, but we could probably talk about this forever and probably will until the next one comes out is, you know, and we'll probably be talking about it at Comic-Con when we go, and there'll be a big argument at dinner like last year. I think crap, I was going to say something. Oh, no, what I really loved the moment where he, like, flies and he's like, yeah, but there's no wonder in the rest of the movie. Like, when he rips open that door in the oil rig and he's on fire, like, those dudes, like, there's the shot before they're looking at the door, and then there's the shot after, and it's almost identical. Like, nobody's like, holy shit, dude, that guy's on fire. Like, nobody reacts in a big way, and... And when he flies down out of the sky and the military's waiting for him, I realize that the military has to have, you know, they have to put their best face on. But at no moment does any military guy go like, "Whoa, holy, what?" You know,
there's
like,
dude, there's a dude flying in front of us.
Yeah, this guy's flying. You know,
look, getting extras to act is really hard. You know? They just stand there and stare.
They did it in the Donner movie in that scene where he flies up to catch the helicopter. Those reactions are perfect. Like, people are pointing, they're like screaming, and they're like, you know, and you don't get any of that. You don't get any of the like, oh my gosh, like, this is big, like. This is a flying guy, you know, and bullets bounce off. You don't get any of that. It's just like, okay, he's here, and there's an alien ship over there, and they're going to conquer us. You know,
again, it's a movie that seems very preoccupied with its main players, you know, and you do have some secondary characters like Dr. Hamilton and things like, you know, like that, but... You know, you didn't really spend a lot of time with anyone who sort of didn't have a name.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I don't know. I mean, Paul, I mean, you said 80%. I'd probably...
I'd say 80% successful.
I'd say like 70, I think.
That's about where I put it, too.
Yeah, I would say 70. I mean,
I'm a bigger fan of the score than you are.
The score is not bad. I think that the score towards the end, you know, in the scenes that it's in is overly used, where it's too bombastic. It's they're overdoing it as far as like trying to get a reaction out of you. So, but I did like the score. I also feel that, dude, Hans Zimmer cribbed the Daft Brothers, Daft Punk from Tron, because I was like, wow, this sounds like Tron to me. So, yeah, I would say 70%. So what does that make it, like a C plus? B minus? I don't know.
Yeah, but, you know, if you had tried harder, though, you could have had it.
That's awesome. Well, on that note, oh, and the other thing I want to say, too, is, I mean, does S stand for steroid or what? Like, the dude was like, come on, Henry Cavill is doing some growth hormone or something. There's no way. Like, Amy saw him. My wife saw him in the movie, like, with his shirt off when he first comes. And she was like, because we'd seen him in The Tudors. We used to watch The Tudors. And he was good in that. I think this guy is a good actor. I don't think that this movie gave him the potential to live up to. But, I mean, he has potential that he can get beyond. You know what I'm saying. But, and she was like, oh, my God. And she was actually... I guess unlike maybe a lot of women, she was kind of turned off. She's like, he looks like a muscle head, like too much, you know? And that's what I thought too. He looked too much like a meathead to me. And I was like a little bit like,
yeah, oh. when he was walking and stealing the clothes, I was like, that seemed a bit much. Like, hey.
Well, maybe not to the women in the audience, but at least yeah. My wife was like, come on, that's too much. Like, he could have been ripped and physically toned and had a lot, but he didn't need to be like this, like Arnold Schwarzenegger looking dude, which is what he was verging on to me. I don't know, yeah. You know, anyway.
Well, and the sort of the sci-fi element that they used, he didn't need to be. I mean, he could have been yeah. as slender as Christopher Reeve, and it's
exactly. Exactly. Well, that's the whole thing of Superman. It's basically kind of like quote unquote magic. You know, I mean, it's right. Yeah, he doesn't, I mean, he could have been in really good shape, but he didn't need to be, you know, Rambo 80s Superman, you know, so I don't know, but that's a little nitpicky for me, but I still want the red underpants back. All right, I think, have we said all we're going to say for the podcast for Man of Steel, or any other last thoughts?
I think we're good.
I think we're good. Well, thanks for listening to us, I don't know, trash Man of Steel for almost an hour and a half. This has been Part-Time Fanboy. I'm Christian Horn, big-time Superman fan. And that's Paul Edwards, medium-sized Superman fan. And Corey Blake, he's not a Superman fan. thanks for joining us. This has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-Time Fanboy. Part time.